Lo, the winter is past, the rain is over and gone. The flowers appear on the earth, the time of the singing of birds is come, and the voice of the turtle is heard in our land.
Throws across his body, and he got it! Looking to wave McCann around third. Throw from the outfield is up the line, inside the park, home run! Deep, gone! Whoa! Up and he makes a catch up against the wall, and he's gonna watch it fly. Strike three called. He got him on strikes.
Welcome to The Voice of the Turtle, a podcast feature of West of Woodward, online at westofwoodward.com and on Twitter at hookslide23. I am your host, Hookslide, switching things up a bit this week, trying to do something to get the Tigers' mojo going. The Voice of the Turtle and the Podcastianos have swapped co-hosts for the week, so today I am joined by Eric Wayne. Eric, how is life in Wayne's world?
Everything is great. It couldn't be better, frankly. If it was any better, it would be too good.
Have you ever had a bad day in your life?
Nah, might as well not. At least might like to tell people you're not having a bad day. Just fake it till you make it, Hook.
Right? People say, I can't complain. I think, well, sure you could if you tried.
Yeah,
you
know. It doesn't do a lick of good. Nobody listens.
You're in that category of like the eternal optimist then, aren't you?
Yeah, well, hey, fake it anyway. Yeah.
Okay, I'm with you. All right, let's do this. Let's start unpacking these boxes as we head into the final four games of the regular season. This weekend will decide the Tigers' fate. It's all going to come down to 3 days in Atlanta, unless there happens to be an emergency game next Monday. We'll talk a bit about the postseason, what happens if the Tigers don't make it. We've got our usual slew of listener questions, and then we'll wrap things up with Eric's power rankings. But first, we round the bases. It is down to the wire now. We'll see you right after the break.
Fly ball here to center. Way back in center. Deep. Gone. Whoa, man. Straight away center to the camera well. Three-run shot for Cabrera. As far as you'll see one hit here at Comerica Park. And the Tigers take a 3-0 lead.
All right, let's get this party started. Rounding the bases, we're down to the wire, Eric. It's been a kind of a wacky up and down last, I don't know, 7 to 10 days. I'm trying to recall all of what even happened.
Right.
It seems like the Tigers, they had a really nice run where they swept the Twins and were winning games, and then they went and played the Kansas City Royals, and things just kind of fell apart. You had K-Rod blowing a game on Saturday. You had Matt Boyd getting absolutely lit up on Sunday. And then the Cleveland Indians roll into town and take the win to clinch the division title. And at that point, I just kind of felt like, well, okay, I'm checked out.
Yeah, you got that sense. I surely did. It was kind of like, oh, you know, we're on the outside now. Yes, we have a chance, but maybe it's time to go to the cider mill. You know, maybe it's time to start thinking about what kind of pumpkin design you want to carve and think about making your kid's Halloween costume and just getting on with your life. But it's not quite have a lifetime, friends. Nope.
No, the Tigers would never let us off that easy. And that's why I'm kind of in this place with them. Kind of like, if you're going to do it, do it. If not, you know, I've got leaves I could rake, you know, and meats that I could smoke and, you know, that kind of thing. So do something or don't. Just stop being in the middle there.
Well, in what, 4 days now, 5 days, whatever it is, we will know. Things will happen.
Well, so they kind of clawed back by taking the next two games from the Indians. Of course, the Indians had clinched by that point and were running out their, not even their B squad. It was like their
hangover.
The hangover lineup, the kind that would make Jim Leland on a Sunday jealous, I think. that's a harsh thing to say. I liked Jim Leland. And I never had a problem with his Sunday.
Did you like his? You loved the Sunday lineup, didn't you?
I didn't see that's them. I just didn't have a problem with them
because all the heart and hustle guys play on Sunday, Hook.
Right, like Don Kelly.
Yeah,
I mean the heart and hustle guy.
Yeah, because they didn't play on the weekends or the rest of the week, so you might as well play them on Sunday.
So, I mean, yeah, the Tigers come back on Tuesday and score like 12 runs or something ridiculous, but it just kind of felt like a hollow, like, well, you just, you know, you beat up on a kid or something, you know, you stole candy from a baby.
It felt hollow to you because you're a hollow person. Okay.
Well, there's some truth in that. I mean,
every run for me is its own microcosm of joy, you know?
Okay. But, tell.
You know, I just want them anytime they're pounding people. I love blowouts. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I love when we blow out teams, and here's a dirty secret. Like, I kind of love when we get crushed.
Really?
Too. And if we're down by like 7, I want them to beat us by like 15. Just lay the hammer. Yeah.
You know, I guess I can follow what you're laying down here. I'm tracking it, because if you get to 10, 12 runs ahead, they're killing us by that much. Then it's kind of like, here come the position pitchers. Come on. They're going to let Andrew Romine pitch. See, this is what we were saying at the beginning. Just either be a winner or be a loser, but don't be in between.
Yes. Poo or refrain from pooing is the PG-13 version. Fish or cut bait.
Or cut bait. Yes. Yeah. Poop or cut bait on the pot, however that goes. Why are you fishing off the toilet anyway? Anyway, different conversation. So here we are. They won two games. They're now it's sight set on just getting a second wild card spot, trying to beat the Baltimore Orioles for that spot. So they take two against Cleveland, and then today it's just a flat rainout. So everything's kind of up in the air. As last I checked, the Orioles were winning, which if that goes through, then the Tigers are now a game and a half out of that wild card spot. Pretty much
a game and a half, or just a half?
No, a game and a half.
A game. So we're two behind as we record this.
We are a game behind, and if the Orioles win, that puts us a game and a half back.
Oh, yeah. Okay, if they win.
So which means that basically the Tigers, they have to sweep the Braves. I mean, right? Kind of? Not
well,
technically, but...
Yeah. I mean, you could root for the fact that the Orioles piss it away. But even if the Orioles piss it away, you still have the Mariners. So they need to take it. And frankly, this is going to break one. Right, they're going to get on a hot streak, and they're going to muscle their way through 6 or 7 games and be in the thick of the playoffs and tackling that, or they're just going to stub their toe and it's all done. Right? It's all kind of, there's no middle ground. You can find some good play.
All right, and after some technical difficulties there, I think we've maybe got it sorted back out, so let's try to kind of go back to what we were talking about, which was the wild card. The Tigers trying to play, having to play the Braves this weekend. The likelihood that they could sweep, I think, is, I really don't know where to land on that. I mean, it's the Braves, right? All season long, we've been talking about, isn't it great that we get to end the season against this horrible team that's going to lose 100 games before it's over? And now I'm just not so sure.
Well, isn't it true that they have sucked less lately?
They have sucked a lot less lately, to use the sabermetric terms, yes.
And they have, what's the capital of Iran? Tehran? Tyrannosaurus? Yes. What's his name? Julio. We're just going to call him Julio.
Yep. Yes, they do. And he's been good all year. He hasn't gotten a lick of run support, so it doesn't show up in, you know, certain stats that shall not be named, like wins and losses. But he's still a fine pitcher out there. And so that's, I guess, and their offense has really come to life in the second half, too. So those kind of things together make me think, well, this is not necessarily going to be just a, you know, it's not an assumed thing that the Tigers can just walk in, sweep that series, put themselves in good position. But they kind of have to. Otherwise, it's back to playing Cleveland on Monday.
Ugh. They're going south, so maybe that helps them a little bit. You know, a little warmer weather, maybe decent weather. You keep the old guys in a little better shape.
I'll buy what you're selling. I will buy.
Sure.
That.
I'm selling a load of goods. Why not?
I'm buying them all. Let's then look back at this conundrum, this riddle over the past season. Why is it the Tigers could not beat the Indians?
Oh, I don't know. They had totally had their number, though. Good starting pitching from the Indians, especially early. I don't know. Let me give it the best try I can. Here it goes. The Indians are better.
Ah, and therein lies the crux of the riddle, because
right,
as we've talked about on this podcast in weeks past, when you compare their records outside of their head-to-head matchups, the Tigers actually have more wins and fewer losses than the Indians. The only reason the Indians' record looks so damn good is because they've cleaned up on the Tigers.
Yeah, those games count, though.
They do. But if you take the Indians out of the equation, take the Tigers out of the Indians' equation, technically the Tigers are the better team.
Are you suggesting some sort of voodoo hex or something? Or?
I'm not suggesting that, if that's what we're saying. I mean, I don't know what to attribute it to, because it seems to me like it's been this bizarre combination of some of those games, they just flat out outplayed us. You know, they did have the better offense and pitching, but then there were so many of those games that were just like, what is happening? Justin Verlander gives up 4 or 5 home runs in an inning?
Really? Okay, I have a suggestion.
Okay.
Did you notice, and they kind of pointed it out in the broadcast, Verlander was receiving multiple signs from the catcher when there was no Indians on second base?
That is true. That suggestion of possibly maybe some sign stealing going on has been raised. I'm not sure if I believe it, but at this point,
I didn't
not?
Make that accusation. I only made the observation.
That's right. We don't make accusations on this podcast. We just observe and report.
That's right.
It's kind of what we do. We'll let the listeners come to the conclusions that we're not drawing, which is that they totally stole signs from us.
We're super fair and balanced, just like Fox News.
I'm not. Don't want to compare us to anything remotely political at this point. Because
I'm smart. You're a smart boy.
Stuff is just, it's heating up right now.
Everybody hates each other.
Yeah. So as I was saying, to me, it's just been a very strange alignment of the planets where, sure, sometimes they just flat out cleaned up. I mean, Aníbal Sánchez had 4 starts. That's a mistake right there. Had 4 starts against the Indians. But then you have these bizarro things like the 4 home runs against JV in one inning, or was it 5, whatever it was. He's never done it, you know, before. You had the occasion when they shut us out, totally blanked us with just their bullpen, with, you know, one pitching hand tied behind their back. And you figure, play that scenario out 10 more times. Did the Tigers win that game most of the 10 times? I think they do.
Yeah, that particular game they do.
Yeah. So it's just some bizarre, the cards had to fall just right, and boy, did they ever.
Mm-hmm.
That's voodoo. I'm going to go with voodoo.
Yep. I still think the Indians are better. Well, now maybe right now they're not, because they've got their starting pitchers hurt. But for the first half of the year, they're better.
Okay.
I'm comfortable saying that.
I'm still, my mind will not accept that for some reason. I can't wrap my mind around that little tidbit.
Well, especially when Zimmerman went down for us, and then later on Castellanos, and you know, we had some trauma, and through much of that time the Indians are better. Record is better.
Eric, my world needs to make sense. Needs to make sense, and it's not making sense right now, because the Minnesota Twins beat the Indians more times than the Tigers did. And that just, I can't figure that out. I can't draw the conclusion that therefore the Indians are better than the Tigers. Otherwise, the Twins are better than the Tigers because they beat the Indians more times? I don't know. The math is failing, and it hurts me.
Yeah.
So now we have to go back to, like, you know, fatalism and determinism and, you know, voodoo and whatever else you...
This is a philosophy podcast, right?
We're all about philosophy. The voice of the turtle is what we're called. The turtle refers to Descartes.
Of course.
Because Descartes was a turtle. What if we just sour grapes the whole situation? And speaking of philosophy, the great morality tale teller, Aesop, you know, had that story about the fox that couldn't reach the grapes. And so he walked away and said, well, they're probably sour anyway. I'm sour grapesing this whole thing by saying, well, after all, did we really want the Tigers in the postseason anyway? I mean, did we want them to have to go face, you know, the Rangers or, God forbid, the Indians again in the postseason, or get all the way to the World Series and have to, you know, implode in front of the Cubs?
Do you want the short answer or the long answer? The short answer is yes. You want the Tigers to make the playoffs. You play to win the game. In order to do that, you need to get into the playoffs. And you never know what is going to happen, so to speak. You know, you got to have that magic. If you do not get in the postseason, then you certainly will not win the World Series. If you get in the postseason, you could yet still win the World Series. These are, you know, kind of upper level thinking. I know.
You make a very good point. What you're saying is, if they don't get into the playoffs, correct me if I'm wrong, they can't win the World Series.
That's correct. That is correct.
Okay. I never thought about it. I'm going to write that down. Boy, I can feel a blog post coming on just based on that
information. Put a sticky note.
Like, have you verified that with Baseball Reference?
You know, I'm sure Tiger Dog, I'm sure our Patrick friend could verify that for us. He's into the minutia.
With the whole history behind it.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. Yes, you are correct. They do need to get into the playoffs to win the World Series. So, hey, we're not out of the running yet.
Nope. We still have equal shot. Think of it like that. Right now, you know, we have not been eliminated, so we have equal shot as everybody else. In the poker, they would say we have a chip in a chair. That is what we have.
We have a short stack, but it's
we are short stacked.
It's a stack, and we're going all in. Oh my Lord, yes. Okay, I think we've circled those wagons and beat that horse and abused
other those metaphors.
Yes, exactly. Abused those metaphors plenty. Let's then call it end to the segment, take a quick break, and then we'll talk about what's coming up in the future right after the break.
Sanchez looks in and gets the sign from Brian Pena. Pena setting up away. The 2-2. Swing! Wow. And a miss! He got it on strikes! A new club record!
What a
17
wow.
strikeouts by Aníbal Sanchez, and he strikes out the side.
And welcome back to the Warming in the Pen segment. We are biting all the nails this time around. As we were alluding to in the previous segment, it all kind of comes down to this weekend. The Tigers being now, I was going to say one game out, but it looks like the Orioles are winning their game tonight. So a game and a half out of the wild card with three games left against the Braves and possibly one more against the Indians on Monday due to the rainout. Okay. Here's another weird philosophical question for you. In your mind, since the introduction of this second wild card to this whole thing, does that even feel like that counts to you, winning a second wild card spot? Or is that kind of like, it's kind of like all your friends went to this cool party and you didn't get invited, but like, you know, you said to your one friend enough times, like, man, sounds like a fun party. And he finally just said, hey, I'm sure you could stop by, but you know, you weren't really invited.
Right. It's like when they try to say the first NCAA play-in games were the first round. Do you remember that?
Yes.
And then they had, due to popular demand, they said, okay, no. These are the play-in games.
Right.
And the first round is the 64 teams, right? Mm-hmm. That's what we have with baseball. We have the play-in games. They're on a Thursday night, you know, nobody watched. Or, no, that's it's right. not. It's before the Thursday. It's like on the Tuesday night,
right.
These NCAA games. But no, I mean, the real magic starts when you get these three game series. The one game is just like a one shot thing. It's more exciting than like a playoff, than like a play in game. I mean, there is some high drama with these things. It's for all the marbles. But yeah, if you get left behind, if you lose that game, you are forgotten forever.
It's true. I think the only play-in game that I can think of in the last couple of years was the one against the Kansas City Royals and the Oakland A's back in 2014. And that's because that one went on, you know, forever into the night, and it was back and forth, and it was kind of exciting, which is exactly what MLB wants. You know, they want to create that high drama, but. You know, going back to the analogy, I feel like, you know, if you're that friend that sort of kind of gets the tag along, you're sort of expected to show up for half an hour, drink a beer, and then go home. The second wild card teams are supposed to just, like, you're supposed to lose. You're not supposed to stick around. And yet they have, haven't they? In the past, I mean.
Yeah,
The Royals went all the way to the World Series.
Yeah. Like I said, get yourself a chip and a chair. You got a chance. You catch that little hot streak. I mean, the Tigers, as much as anybody, could catch a hot streak. It's not like they don't have talent. It's that they've been, I'm going to say, fatigued, stressed, injured, worn. For the Tigers, that's more of an issue than having talent, having enough, arms and bats. So maybe you catch that little healthy hot streak and you create some magic.
I think you're absolutely right in terms of you have enough built-in raw talent here with, you just look up and down that lineup, look up and down that rotation. I know things have gone wonky, like Jordan Zimmermann, for example, was supposed to be a solid number two who thought he would implode, in May and never come back. But it's still there, right? Zimmermann could easily walk out to the mound today and snap, there it is. He's back to being him.
Right. We're not a bunch of scrappy young overachievers. I mean, this is a tank that is just a little bit unagile. And if you get it pointed in the right direction and can keep the tracks on for long enough, it can run over some stuff.
It's unstoppable if it's all if the gears are working and everything's properly oiled and the shells are not loaded backwards,
Got to keep it properly oiled.
That's always a big problem. And so we get to this kind of this, the possibility of, let's say they get to the play-in game and they make it, now they're into the division series, and of the contenders that are out there, the Indians have clinched, the Rangers have clinched, the Red Sox have clinched by this point. Who do you like in the matchups with the Tigers?
Who do I want the Tigers to play?
Yes. Or who do I feel like they match up the best against, or worst for that matter?
Well, not the Indians, I can tell you that. So then my choices are the Rangers or the Red Sox.
I guess that would be the other, yeah.
I have this gut ache when thinking about playing the Red Sox because of the whole Torii Hunter flipping over and stuff. So I guess it's the Rangers. Do you know what our season records were against those guys?
I don't have those numbers in front of me.
I don't either.
I know that they, if memory serves, they beat up on the Red Sox pretty decently. And then they went into Fenway and took like 3 or 4, didn't they?
Yeah, that's true. Maybe it's the Red Sox. Show Dave who's boss.
I forgot about that. I totally forgot about that significance, that it would be Dave Dombrowski versus Al Avila. And I said at the beginning of the year, if Dave frickin' Dombrowski goes to the World Series in his first year as a GM with the new team, I'm going to light something on fire. Here's the records. They were 5-2 against Boston.
Okay.
And they were 2-4 against Texas. So Texas kind of got...
Yeah.
You know what? But one of those Texas games was when Mark Lowe imploded and they were winning like until the eighth and then he gave up a grand slam. So that should be more like 3-3.
Can you imagine a series against the Red Sox with David Price and Pretty Rick and just like facing those guys again? It'd be crazy.
Can you imagine the bases loaded and David Ortiz coming to the plate? Only now it's K-Rod throwing his changeup on the mound.
Too soon.
It's never not going to be too soon. We've got to heal and move on. We do. What do they call that? What's that therapy? Immersion therapy?
Yeah, systematic desensitization.
Yes, it's immersion therapy. You sit in front of the TV and watch that clip over and over and over until you don't care anymore.
The Clockwork or Orange. Get the metal holding your eyes open.
And what song would you want playing as you are Clockwork Oranging your way through that?
I don't know. Probably some Katy Perry. Just spruce it up a little bit.
Nice. I like that. Somebody you don't mind never listening to ever again.
I suppose.
So going beyond that, those playoff scenarios, and I would want to see the Red Sox just because I'm kind of a big believer in, what am I trying to say? Revenge, basically. They got beat up in 2013. Give me a rematch because I think they could maybe set that right. And then we could stop talking about 2013. See?
That would be happy. We're getting way ahead of ourselves, but that would be very happy.
Yeah. But this is how I stay happy. I get way ahead of myself and live in that, that to-be-determined future where it's all happy. So now let's kind of fast forward and say it's all said and done. postseason's over one way or the other, you know, or the regular season, maybe we don't make the postseason. A lot of people are talking about what's going to happen in terms of the management with Brad Ausmus. And, you know, are the Tigers going to extend the contract? Are they going to go ahead and let him walk? What's your gut feel on that?
Well, Lynn Henning broke some very shocking news.
Oh.
And he reported that Brad Ausmus is probably going to come back, but nothing is sure yet. And I thought, good job, Lynn.
Like, that's a serious news break.
Anybody who can fog a mirror could have made that report if they don't.
A mirror.
I mean, come on. So that is the status, right? Brad is likely back, but not for sure. I think he's back.
Really?
Yeah, I think he is. The thing about Brad is he's not making huge mistakes. I think the reason why the fan base does not rally behind him is we were hoping for somebody more innovative who was prepared to change the manager handbook a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And Brad is not that. Brad is a very by the book, this is the manager handbook manager. And that following that doesn't get you fired, but it also does not make you stand out or help you win. I mean, disproportionately as to other managers, I think. He's a by the book guy.
Right, right. There's actually a name for that, and the name is escaping me. They talk about it in the book Scorecasting. Brian Kenny talks about it in his book Ahead of the Curve, but I can't remember the term. It's basically, risk averse, I think, I guess is what it is. You know, so is it basically, you won't take the chance on something novel that might actually work, might actually have better stats behind it, because if it fails, you're exposed and you're dead. If you take the safe play, even though it's the lower percentage play, and it doesn't work, you're not exposed.
You know, Jim Leland, for being such an old school cigarette smoking manager, I think took a few more risks than Brad does.
Yeah, but Jim Leland was flat out crazy. That's what was so cool about it. Like, he wasn't back there looking at a spreadsheet and going, oh, you know, actually the percentage play is, he was more like, no, I feel it. It's in my gut today.
Yeah.
Donnie's going to run into one, so he's going to bat first. It's just like, dude.
Yeah. I would like to see a manager who's willing to push the envelope in a more numbers-oriented way and try some more, I'm going to call them desperation-style tactics. Or even earlier in the year, like, we need to win this game. We're not going to play for tomorrow, so we're going to make a, you know, we're going to bring our closer in early, or we're going to pitch for a, you know, we're going to try for a four out save, or we're going to try to do some things that appear to be desperate to try to snatch some of those victories. But that's just not in Brad's character, I don't think.
No, he does play it very straight and almost, you know, kind of by the gut. Whenever he gives those explanations for why did you do this or that, it's always that kind of, you know, well, it felt right, basically, is what it amounts to, you know.
Yeah.
Well, because that's what you always do. And he's kind of condescending about it, too.
Yeah, because that's what baseball managers do.
That's
yeah.
what you do, dummy. Why did you ask me that question?
Yes. Right.
And I think for me, especially when I'm watching guys like Terry Francona, or to a lesser degree, Joe Maddon, just because I don't watch as many Cubs games as I might, you know, other American League Central teams, I kind of get jealous. You know, kind of watching the way they play, they're not slaves to things like, oh, it's a lefty, so I'm going to get a lefty on the mound. They pay attention to the numbers and say, well, maybe this lefty hits, you know, righties worse, so I'm going to go to a righty. And that's just not something that's in Brad's, you know, but it could be. I feel like we're talking about, like, reasons why you would hang on to him. Why would Al Avila keep Brad Ausmus, do you think?
Because he's you know, you're not changing horses midstream. You got veteran guys. I'm a thinker who thinks that game tactics are maybe 50%, maybe 60% of the manager's job. You have to manage egos. You have to keep your guys happy. You need to have a certain locker room spirit. You know, those, I don't want to overplay those, But those still are an important thing that a manager has to do. You need to, you know, speak with the media. You need to keep your guys fresh. All that kind of stuff is as important over the course of a year than making one in-game tactical decision. You know, lineups essentially do not matter, right? So it's some of that CEO, club CEO of, you know, kind of thing that you need to, that managers need to do that I think is important too. That would be the reason why you would keep him. If they were to fire him tomorrow and say, hey, good job, Brad. Thank you for your service, but we don't see a future. Would I, you know, weep big tears? No, I probably wouldn't. But I can understand a reason to keep him. Like, now we're not the Pittsburgh Steelers, but what are the Pittsburgh Steelers known for? They hire a coach that they think is good and they stick with him and they say, you are our coach. And they have bad years, but then they have good years. And the coach doesn't have to worry. He's got some authority in the locker room. He knows he's not going to get canned. The players know he's not going to get canned. And I think that's, even in a couple bad years, sometimes can be as effective in setting up a team long term. I think it's insane when I watch some European soccer. They are canning their managers monthly. And it's just like a revolving door over there. And I don't know how much good that does you after a while.
No, I agree in the sense that, you know, I think it's disruptive if you're going to be swapping out managers every 6 months, you know, mid-season and wherever else. You're never going to get any continuity. I guess I was the one saying even back in May, I think it was, you know, when they lost a bunch of games in a row and people were like, you know, are we going to fire Osmus finally? And I thought, this is a bad time to do that. Don't do it now.
Right.
This is a horrible. You should have done that in the offseason if you were going to do it at all, which is why I do kind of feel like now would be a good time. If you're Al Avila, if you're going to be more, you know, analytics oriented, you're going to build out that team and hire guys like Chris Long to consult for you and, you know, all this stuff. Why not put a guy in the manager spot who's going to, you know, not take orders from you, because Al seems to be a very hands-off guy, but who's at least going to work with the team you assembled. You know,
right.
The stuff you're talking about is important, yes, and I feel like as long as you hand Brad a really good team, it'll be fine, because he's great when it comes to, like, yeah, just I'm going to get out of the way and push buttons, you know? Whenever things start to fall apart, when your 7th and 8th inning guys are no longer performing, when somebody gets injured and now you got to make a replacement... He does the dumb things. He doesn't know how to handle the exceptions.
Yep. He's slow to the trigger. He's slow to make a change. Yep.
There's that. Or you talk about, like, you know, JD Martinez gets injured and he plays Mike Avilas over and over and over again. And,
right. I'm saying he's slow to changing a player's role.
Sure.
He's slow to realizing that a player is slumping and either maybe needs a break or sent down in the lineup or something. I get when you manage veterans, you got to give them some space. But does he rely too much on reputation, salary, and personality when making decisions? You know, he's not that cold analytics Ivy League guy that we thought we were getting. No, we were getting a, you know, 18-year veteran catcher, right? Or what? I don't know how many years he caught, but I mean, he had a long, distinguished major league career. That's the place he's managing from, not Captain Dartmouth.
No, exactly. That's where he learned baseball, was in that environment. He didn't learn baseball at Dartmouth. That's exactly correct. I think of guys like Clint Hurdle, you know, who was a very much an old school manager. Funny thing is, he took some time off of baseball. I think it was the Rockies that fired him, and before the Pirates picked him up, he spent a year doing, like, analysis on MLB Network. And it was there that he got introduced, like, other analysts there introduced him to, like, Fangraphs and Baseball Reference and showed him how to look stuff up.
And really?
He kind of got a little education. Thought, this is cool. Like, I actually have numbers that back up my gut feelings, and he liked to get into that. So when he went to the Pirates and they went full-on sabermetrics, it was a perfect, you know, here's an old-school guy who's also learned a couple new things. And so... That's kind of my hope with Brad Ausmus, you know. Like,
I find that stunning, but, like, many other people I know who are of that age, like, don't know how to work a computer. I kind of remind myself of that.
I'm not sure how old he would have been right after the Rockies, but before the Pirates. But yeah, they showed him how to look stats up, and he kind of fell in love with it and was like, I can't. I think he described it in terms of the Wizard of Oz. Like, you can't go back to Kansas after this.
It seems like such a elementary thing and such a basic and vital thing to do if you're a manager.
You would think, right?
Gosh.
But what are we saying? If you spend 20 years like Brad Ausmus, you know, in the major league environment, you're not looking up stats. You're playing the game and you're saying, I have a feel for it. I know how it goes. Yep. You don't get to teach me this.
Yep. You always hit a lefty to face a righty. You always. Yeah. Because that's the instrument of knowledge that you have.
Experience. I've seen it work over and over again. And what was the quote from the other day? I don't give a crap what the numbers say, or I don't give a crap about the odds.
Well, and if the only tool you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail, right? So, like, if the only tool you have is righty on lefty matchups, well, that's how you approach it.
That makes total sense. I'm just hoping he can be molded. If they're going to extend that contract, or, you know, I'm not sure exactly. He's got another year. No, he does not have another year. There was like maybe a team option or something.
I think it's some kind of option. Yeah.
So I would imagine, which is another fun thing to speculate about. Did they just go ahead and pick up the option, or do they go ahead and say, no, here's a 3-year, you know, deal. Cause Tiger Town will riot if they give him like a long extension.
I think you're right. I don't think they can do that. The option might be the smart play.
Give it a year, see what happens.
Yep.
Because you talk about managers that are out there that might be more kind of, you know, compliant or amenable to the stats heavy stuff. They're out there, but they're sitting on benches, you know, third base coaching, that kind of thing. So who knows what networking is going on, or, you know, what have you. So fun stuff. All right. We'll call it quits for that. Take a quick break. Come back with our high and tight segment, and we'll talk about the rest of what's going on in the rest of baseball this postseason and make some silly predictions right after the break.
3-2 pitch. Swinging a line drive left center field. Jackson on the run. He'll make the catch in left center. Max Scherzer, a pump of the fist as he comes off the mound. The bases are loaded with nobody out. He strikes out two and gets Kiasko on the line.
And welcome back. Time for the high and tight segment. We're talking about what is the shape of October as we approach the postseason. I can't believe that there's only 3-ish, 4 games left in the regular season. That just blows my mind.
I know. Have we been, you know, taking it for granted? Are we? It's going to be sad when it's done. So after the Tigers are out, do you watch the rest of the postseason?
It really depends on who is involved in it. I can tell you in 2013 when they got bounced, I quit. Like, I didn't care about the Red Sox. I didn't care about the Cardinals. And that was the end of it.
Yeah, sometimes I'm so bitter and just need a break because I miss my Tigers and I'm sad that they lost. But then usually after a week or two, then I'll kind of tune in again because my pain has subsided somewhat.
Right. Come to think of it, 2014 was the same way when they got swept by the Orioles. I don't think I tuned back in until like Game 7 of the World Series.
Yeah. Yep. That's kind of how I roll too.
Yeah, whereas last year we got bounced so early, you know, we were done in August. And so when the postseason came around, I actually kind of did. I was rooting for the Blue Jays the whole way. So I watched a lot of the postseason last year.
Yep.
So we talk about, you know, we mentioned briefly in the last segment, the teams that are probably going to be involved. And I'm not even sure from the National League side. I think the Nationals have clinched. The Dodgers have clinched. And of course, the Cubs. Those are your three big National League teams. And in the American League, it's the Indians, the Red Sox, the Rangers. Assuming it's, you know, one of these six. Two of these six, I should say, that end up going all the way to the World Series. Do any of those teams particularly interest you? Any rooting interests on either side?
The Cubs. The Cubs are the best story, right? Mm-hmm. They haven't won in forever. Their manager is fun. Their team is young and fun. They have guys who can cross the ball. They have a nifty ballpark. They're the story.
They are the story. Does that mean you want them to win, or is it a more interesting story if they get all the way to the World Series and still manage to lose it?
I kind of want them to have some kind of crushing story that, you know, I want them to get really close and then have something quirky that crushes them forever.
That's dark. That's really dark, but I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So like game seven.
Be who you are, Cubs.
Yeah.
You know,
just lose because it's a curse and curses don't go away.
Yeah.
They don't. If a curse goes away, it's not really a curse. It was just weird coincidence.
But, I mean, maybe this is the year. I mean, Cleveland won a championship in basketball.
Right, right.
You know, there's – listen, if you're not a superstitious person, it's the Cubs. I think they're the favorite.
They're clear favorites. But as we both know, weird crap happens in the postseason. Yep. You could get to a game seven. They could have the lead in the eighth inning by 3 runs, and suddenly they lose it. And they go to extras, and then there's a walk-off, and the Cubs lost again.
I kind of want the Cubs to win. Just get it out of your system, Chicago. Win the damn thing. And then maybe we don't got to hear about you anymore.
That's right.
In your freaking pretentious park, and you're losing. Just get it out of your system. Win. Reset the clock at one. And then you can be a fine team without all your angst, and we'll be fine.
This unit has had 0 days since its last incident of despair and misery. Get you.
Exactly.
Okay. I can get on board with that. Just find win, get the inevitable over with, be done with it.
Stop being insufferable.
I'm certainly not rooting for the Red Sox, again, because if Dombrowski gets a freaking world championship after all those years with Detroit and not getting it, can't do it, man.
Don't want the Red Sox. I certainly do not want the Indians.
Really? So that's another thing I was going to ask you, because there's two schools of thought on that. You're either Team AL Central, you know, that's our representatives, those are our boys, you know, AL Central all the way, or you feel like they're just the opposite. Screw them.
No.
Because it's...
Screw them, yeah. I'd rather have some National League team win.
Honestly, the fact that the Nationals are in this, more, you know what, more so than the Nationals, the Dodgers. The Dodgers have clinched their division 4 years in a row now, just like the Tigers did. And they haven't even been to the World Series in those 4 years.
Yeah. Something always derails them.
Yeah. I'm kind of pulling for the Dodgers now that I think about it.
How about the Nats? I mean, they got Max. I don't know. They got Harper. The Nats?
I'm not a big... they just kind of are a non-entity to me. That's never really kind of sunk in that they're a baseball team, I guess. I don't know why. And they're the ones that had Jonathan Papelbon, you know, being dink, you know, so screw them.
Okay.
I don't care about the Nationals. The Dodgers, Vin Scully's final year, you know.
I don't want to come back to the election, but it's kind of like it's not us, I don't really want anybody to win.
Well, there's that. There's that. But if you're going to sit on the couch and watch postseason baseball, you know, you either got to put money on somebody to keep, you know, a vested interest, or you got to find another reason. And I can't think of a better reason than it's Vince Scully's final year. Let's see the Dodgers get in there. Maybe, just maybe, if they get to the post or the World Series, maybe he'll call a game. Maybe. I know he said he wouldn't, but if they're in the World Series, maybe. Maybe he pops
in for one inning. Would be neat. You know, the guy is what, 90 or something like that?
Yeah, like 106.
Yeah. He doesn't need all the taxing work of calling the game. Maybe by not calling it, he could just enjoy it. Just be there. He'd get the same admiration and adulation as if he was calling the game. Just be there.
I'm just being selfish.
Take it in.
I'm just saying, you know, pop in.
Yeah, you are.
Call the fourth, fifth, and sixth innings of one of those games just so I don't have to listen to Joe Buck for that length of time.
Yeah, I mean, if they're game seven of the World Series or something, maybe he comes up and calls a couple innings. That'd be adorable.
Like a teddy bear. Just adorable
Vince Scully. Oh, warms the cockles of your heart.
Did you catch any of his final home game when they actually clinched with a walk-off home run in extra innings?
No.
That was, you talk about a way to end it. That was amazing. And he called the whole thing, and they, you know, so now they're on field partying because they're at home and they clinched and, you know, hats and shirts and stuff. And they all kind of stopped and turned and faced the booth and did the tip of the cap. All the same. It was really kind of, it was cool. But yeah.
My favorite Vin Scully thing was he had his like press conference or whatever. And the first thing is he's like, What can I say that would help you guys to this group? That was the first thing. And then somebody asked them, like, you know, now that you're retired, you know, what are you going to be doing with your life? And he said something like, you know, when you're 90, you know, living is kind of just the main thing.
Right.
Something, it was the quote, like, you know, I'm just going to try to continue to live.
Yes, yes. Now that you mentioned that, I think Dan and Jim on the radio were talking about that the day after. And yeah, the fact that, hey, when you retire at 60, you know, you've got things to do. You take up golf, you move to Florida. But when you're 86, 88, whatever he is, it's like, well, survival is job one.
Right. You can continue to take sustenance and move on.
Oh, God bless him. I hope he lives a long, long time after that. But
he will. He'll live forever.
Maybe, you know. I always kind of find it funny that he didn't retire at a normal, quote unquote, you know, retirement age, because he must have just friggin' loved his job to stick with it for that long.
And I am a kind of a Midwest guy. I don't listen to a lot of West Coast games or listen to Vin Scully at all. But isn't it? I mean, he called those games by himself.
Yes.
Right.
Yes, he did.
No color man. It's just him and a microphone and no hogwash.
And just kind of nonstop, no awkward, you know, like Hawk Harrelson has a partner and has way more awkward silences. Vin Scully just keeps it going, and here's the pitch, and there's the curveball, and then he'll like just lapse into one of a thousand stories, and I'm sure you've read all about...
He's his own color man.
He is. You don't get more colorful than Vin Scully sitting here telling you about Tory Hunter when he was younger. His dad had a crack pipe, you know, like the stories he was telling when the Tigers were in town that one back in 2014.
Guy's a living legend.
What's funny is hearing from the players that have, you know, talked to him or whatever and saying, like, he came up and told me stuff about what I did when I was a kid, and I'm looking at him like, how did you know that? He's like, I think he reads minds.
He's like, good.
He's probably tapping into this right now and reading my mind. That's why I'm wearing this tinfoil hat, in case you were wondering. So, all right. So did we settle on a team, man? I'm rooting Dodgers all the way.
Okay. You talked me into it. Okay. You know, your sales pitch was so good. I also am now going to root for the Dodgers.
Can we talk a little bit about Amway now, as long as we're selling things?
No? I'm interested in a cooperative business, you know, opportunity. Yeah.
Are you interested in financial freedom and independence at a young age? After the podcast, we'll have a beer and I'll tell you all about it.
Thank you.
Okay. It's getting silly. So enough of high and tight. Take a quick break. Come back with our Into the Mob Scene segment and take some questions from the listeners, because, yes, this is getting silly. Talk to you right after the break.
Swinging a fly ball to left field. This one's deep. Going back. Gentry at the fence. It's gone. Wow. It's gone. A walk-off grand slam in the bottom of the ninth for Jose Davis. Incredible. Around third. Into the mob. Skid it home.
And into the mob scene at home we go. It is that part of the show where we take questions from our listeners. You can reach us on Twitter. I'm at Hookslide23. My normal co-host, Rob Rojacki, is at BYB Rob. Eric, you are at Comerica Eric, correct?
I am.
There it is. And we'll do all the, you know, podcast annos, and we'll give all that information at the end. But yes, if you want to get your questions to us, that's how you do it. Let's kick this thing off. First question is from @I_of_the_Tigers, wants to know, what would happen if three teams were tied for the second wild card, and how would they resolve that?
You know, I, being an avid consumer of Tigers baseball news, read on blessyouboys.com today, and I think Rob wrote this article and addressed this very question, and it said, what if three teams tie for the wild card or tie for the last spot? And the answer was, the world explodes.
I believe that. I believe that Rob wrote that, and I believe that that's also true.
There you have it, on no less authoritative source.
Yeah, they fight is what they do. They have an on-field battle. Each team gets to pick a representative. It's kind of a gladiator style thing. And, you know, last man standing, that team goes on to play in the ALDS.
I don't think we need to get ahead of ourselves. Let them play the game, and then we'll figure it out.
The real answer to that question is I haven't got a freaking clue, because that's the kind of minutia that I just don't. Even if you told me, even if I read it 10 minutes ago, I couldn't repeat it back to you in a way that made sense. Right. But there is an article whenever about you boys, so you know, go look it up.
Yeah. Whenever I don't know anything about the Tigers, one, I Google it. And if it's not on the first page, I just tweet Patrick.
That's exactly right. Patrick O'Kennedy, TigerDog1 on Twitter, will tell you everything you ever wanted to know about that scenario. Yep. So the follow-up question is, who are your favorite current Tigers and why?
Oh, man. You know, it's easy to pick the big boys, right? I mean, Cabrera, Kinsler, Verlander, these guys are good at baseball. That's generally not the way I go.
No,
my favorite Tiger right now is Alex Wilson.
Is it really?
Yeah. Okay. Forget his, you know, politics or whatever. I like him just because I don't know how this guy's arm is still attached. We have run him out there so much in the last couple of years, and he stubbed his toe a couple times, but he is just consistent. He pitches in every kind of role, and the Tigers think, oh, we have some hotshot bullpen arm. They're going to pitch the seventh and eighth inning, right? So it's low. So yeah, it's Green, and Green has been good at times, but you know, those guys stumble and fall, and guess who pitches those spots when the next guy stumbles? It's freaking Alex Wilson, because he's always there and he's always decent. Alex Wilson.
I will not disagree with that. And you're right. You don't tend to go for the big names. You've always kind of attached to guys like Phil Koch, you know, or you know, Blaine Hardy, or now it's Alex Wilson.
Luke Pekonen.
I forgot about your Pekonen phase. Did I ever give you the autographed baseball? I meant to give it to you. The Luke Pekonen signed autographed baseball.
You have a Lupu signed baseball?
I took a Sharpie to it and drew a frowny face.
I appreciate that.
I'm going to give that to you. That'll be my gift to you.
You should. You know, instead of signing like with your number or HOF, you would just put a frown.
Just a frowny face, that's all.
I miss Lupu.
I know.
His gloomy disposition.
Smile. No, smile. Oh, forget it. Take the picture. Oh, geez. I tend to like gravitate towards the underdogs that I think are going to surprise us. You know, so that's why I was all over Mike Pelfrey at the beginning of the year, because everybody hated him. You know, and he pissed in my Cheerios good and hard. So that relationship is over.
Yeah, he wasn't very good. Hook.
Career worst year. So I am absolving myself of that pick completely, because everything I said was based on him being at least career average.
Right.
So, but then even then it was like guys like Nick Castellanos. You know, I really wanted to see him have a good breakout year, and he was.
He did.
You know, before he busted his hand. So that's another one that I'm kind of really attached to, is Castellanos.
I know who you're attached to.
Who?
It's somebody who is not yet a Tiger.
Well, now if we're talking about opening minor league floodgates, there is one. There's only one for me. And
yeah,
well, there's,
I mean,
two actually, but
heart eyes, bud.
Well, there's kind of two guys in that spot now, though. I mean, Joe Jimenez, yes, absolutely. Michael Gerber is still very much on my.
Oh, jeez, Gerbs
is on my watch. He got what was it, the Rawlings something or other glove award in the minor leagues this year too. Just an all around solid. What?
Yeah. The Hook Slide Touch My Heart Rawlings Award.
Inscribe it on my heart like leather, baby. Oh, gosh. I tell you what, I have two custom-made jerseys from the Whitecaps. One of them is Jimenez and one is Michael Gerber.
You got a Gerbs jersey?
Absolutely, I did.
That's pretty sweet, dude.
And I made sure to get the number that he wore with the Whitecaps, not whatever number he's wearing now. So,
I'd like a Wichita State. I think he's a Shocker. A Wichita State Shockers Gerber jersey or an Andy Dirks jersey. That'd be pretty hot.
Yeah, yeah.
A Dirks Shocker jersey. A Shocker jersey would be awesome.
Next question. At T TW Drenth on Twitter says, if the Tigers renovated Comerica Park, the outfield, what gimmick could they introduce to still drive Lynn Henning crazy?
Poor Lynn.
Poor
Lynn. It just complains about the outfield wall distance all the time. And when it comes to run scoring, when it comes to home runs, over and over again, Comerica Park has shown to be neutral for those factors. This is not opinion. This is not subjective. You look at the numbers, and Comerica Park plays neutral. It's almost league average every time.
It's but science.
Lynn is so chapped that some of these balls are not home runs. And that is just a feature of Comerica Park. It's a little bit, it's deep in center field, but overall it plays pretty neutral. So that's the shtick with Lynn. But you know what I would do? I would, because we're going to renovate the park, we're going to angle the walls. So we're going to tip them back like at a, you know, if up and down is 90, we're going to put them at like a, you know, 75 degree angle or something like that. So you can kind of run it up a Bo Jackson style.
So you're talking about taking the actual fence and like tilting them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like back towards the crowd.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I mean.
Wow. That would, I'm not sure what that would do to him. What would Lynn, what would Lynn do with that?
Yeah, so you can run up it kind of Bo Jackson style. You know, you ever go to one of these trampoline parks, like where Jabba Chamberlain busted his ankle?
Right.
You know, you got the wall, the trampoline walls on the side. Maybe that's what I want. Trampoline walls on the outfield fence, kind of at an angle.
I like that idea.
How about you? What are you doing?
What I want them to do is I want them to bring the fences in just an absolute minuscule amount, 2-3 feet, so that it doesn't matter. And on top
bring
of
them
that,
all in 6 inches.
Right. But then I want them to leave the original markers out there. So it still says, you know, 375 or whatever, 380. Yep. And it'll drive him bonkers to know that those numbers aren't correct. And he'll constantly having to be like issuing disclaimers and asterisks. Like, well, they said
you do know about the conspiracy from Tiger Stadium, don't you?
Maybe
that the outfield walls were not as far as they had marked.
So they actually, if it says 420, it's really like 410.
Yeah. Right. Because wasn't the straightaway center at Tiger Stadium 440?
I think it was.
Didn't,
it was deep.
They had it marked 440. But when they tried to do some measurements and kind of recalculate and try to, you know, replicate some of the feel of at Comerica, I think it's true, or it's at least legend, that it was like 20 feet different.
Really?
That
you're
it
talking
was
about
only,
the old stadium.
Yeah, I'm talking old Tiger Stadium.
Okay.
And in fact, one time I was talking to Gage maybe on Twitter, Tom Gage, and trying to figure it out because I was trying to figure out if this rumor was true. And so I went as far as like finding an old satellite image and taking the scale and trying to figure it out.
Oh,
it was
wow.
kind of inconclusive, but I still have not figured out if that rumor is true or not. So
it's a fun bit of folklore.
Yeah. At me at Comerica Eric, if you have any information,
because
just because they wrote 440 or whatever it was, does not mean it was 440.
Well, people were shorter back then too. So maybe they were measuring by body length and it just didn't, you know,
this is Bible times. It's probably measured with cubits.
That's right. Build the stadium 60 cubits by 30 cubits. And Lynn was right there the whole time going, that's too deep. That's too deep. So
yeah. Well, he watched the ark being built, so right. He should know.
Right, exactly. Oh, goodness. At Chief Broom wants to know, if you were to rank the top 7 minivans, what would they be? Also, the bottom 3.
Ah, minivans. You know, when it comes to minivans, I would have to probably say number 1 for sure, without a doubt, would have to be to say something. that's just really how I feel about Rainy Vance.
Wow. Like, I can't believe you actually ranked them. Like, I didn't think you were ever going to get around to that. Is awesome. That is so freaking cool.
Special treat just for your listeners.
Thank you. Applause. I love it. All right. At Sierra Dean wants to know, what's your go-to drink for when things get really ugly around the fifth inning?
I'm answering all these questions first. Yeah. Is this in? Would you like to take one or?
Oh, it doesn't matter the order that we go in. answering this question honestly, it depends on the time of year. It really does. During the hot summer, I'm tend to be drinking craft beers. But when it starts,
yep.
or if I'm going to drink, you know, something harder, it's usually like vodka and soda, something kind of light. But if we're talking like September time frame and things are getting rough in the fifth inning, I'm going to rum and coke every time.
Oh, interesting. I'm with you with the craft beer. I like a nice IPA. If I'm feeling wealthy, I'm going to crack open a double IPA. You know, a 90 minute IPA Dogfish has like one of my favorite. If I have a few like founder specialties, that's a nice one. That's what I like to go to. However, you know, I did just pick up a bottle of Kirkland brand blended Scotch whiskey.
Ooh.
From the Costco.
Yes, the Costco brand.
Yeah. So it's good, and it comes in a gigantic bottle, which is important for Tigers fans.
Especially if we're getting into that bullpen in the fifth inning. Very yep. important that you do not run out. So
it's the big bottle.
If you're going to go vodka, get Svedka, because, you know, it's cheap and you can buy it in bulk and it tastes just as good when you're mixing it with diet grape soda yep. like I do sometimes.
Wow.
Right? Now you know that about me. I like your idea, though. Like, sometimes you want an IPA and then sometimes you're just feeling like living it up. I'll take another IPA on top of that, a double IPA.
Yes.
It's like me when I eat caviar Pop-Tarts, you know, just feeling rich today. So,
yeah.
Tasty. Okay. At Tenage D. Who makes
Tenage D?
I guess. Tena JD on
yeah,
Twitter.
Good.
Who makes the decision? I do that on purpose because I want people to be like, what the? Who makes the decision to require a DH in the National League?
History? The league rules? I mean,
if it comes
what do you
to,
mean?
Like, because, you know, they're what? Talking about redoing the rules, you know.
So not who has made the decision. It's who would make it going forward if you're going to institute
are,
it.
They are talking very seriously about standardizing and bringing
good. The they DH should
to both or taking it away from both. So
no, they should. They should have the DH. I would guess it's the league. And the league is controlled by the owners, and it would need to be collectively bargained with the players.
Would they have to be in agreement as they collectively bargained?
Well, yeah. Okay. I mean, but think of this from the players' union point of view. You want the DH. Because you're sure. getting an extra veteran, older player who can extend their playing time and rake in some more money. You add 15 more career DHs. Not career DHs. I mean, that's their position, DHs.
Right, right.
Role DHs.
You know, it's a
good, you create essentially 15 more players, right?
Well, that's what we're saying. Like, there is no way. If they're going to standardize, they're not going to standardize by taking it away from the American League. There are way too many.
The league will never, the union will never go for that.
There's too many DHs who that's what they're doing for life, and they would be out of a job, you know?
Yeah, like Victor. Victor is having a huge season at the plate, despite his occasional hiccups, but he can't go back on the field. He's brittle.
Yeah, right. David Ortiz, I don't think, ever played a game on the field. A lot of those guys, But as far as, like, who actually makes the decision, I mean, yeah, you have to have, like, owner buy-in, but I don't think the owners necessarily give a crap one way or the other. They'd have to, you know, clear it with the players. So it's right. a joint decision.
Yeah, I mean, the league would say, yes, we want to do this, and then they needed to get it approved with the union in the collective bargaining agreement, I would assume.
That's Ask how Patrick. I would see it. Yeah. Patrick O'Kennedy at TigerDog1 on Twitter will tell you. Final question. At Tigers_opinions on Twitter says, is our starting rotation next year, assuming that it's Verlander, Zimmerman, Fulmer, Boyd, and Norris, is that rotation top three or four in Major League Baseball? I think it's a heavy, that's a heavy assumption to make to start with.
The short answer is no. The Cubs rotation is better. That's one.
Well, we're saying top
the
three,
Indians
top three,
rotation was better.
Okay, yep.
The Dodgers is better. So we're already talking four. There's got to be more that are just as good or better, because you're putting a lot on, for sure, Norris and Boyd, but Fulmer having just as good a season and Zimmerman being healthy, and that's just a lot of assumptions. There's hope. There's promise there. I don't want to totally piss on your fire, but I mean, there's some assumptions there.
It's kind of, it reminds me of coming into 2016. All these kind of question marks that you have to make assumptions and say, well, if, then we've got a killer team. If Verlander is just as good next year as he was this year, if Fulmer can repeat his rookie season, if Zimmerman is back, you know, to being Zimmerman, then you got a really great 1-2-3. And then if, you know, Daniel Norris can take some strides forward, then maybe you're talking top, you know, five, maybe.
Yeah.
But
I think that's
The assumption, though, is incorrect, I think. It's not going to be Verlander, Zimmerman, Fulmer, Boyd, and Norris, because you still got Aníbal Sánchez under contract. You still got Mike Pelfrey under contract.
Yep.
I
think probably at this stage, Pelf has a better shot of being a regular in the rotation than Sánchez.
Really?
That's so sad for me to say.
Really?
Can't you see the wheels coming off of Sánchez a little bit? His stuff, unless his control, he showed flashes where his control was pretty solid.
I am not in any way suggesting that that's the case because of talent. I'm simply coming from the financial standpoint. I do not see them sticking a $17 million reliever in the bullpen.
You're probably right.
Pelf might be better, and I think he's got a better shot than Sánchez, but I just, if it comes down to the two of them.
But there's been stretches this year when Sánchez has been straight trash. Like, you could not trust him at all. There were some streaks where he looked good, but it was super streaky, and a lot of these streaks were like one of the worst pitchers in the league for a while.
He absolutely was in the bottom three of all baseball for a good chunk of the first couple months.
Yeah, that's bad. That doesn't hold up in the rotation. That doesn't work every 5 days. You cannot do that.
Well, no, and you especially can't do that if Pelfrey is also in that. Now you've got every fourth and fifth day is just go to hell. You know, you can't.
Well, right. And especially Boyd and Norris are kind of knocking on the door and are fairly solid at all. Like, those guys won't stick.
Yeah,
meaning Pelfrey and Sánchez.
And as Rob reminded me some weeks ago, there was actually a stretch in 2015 when Sánchez, you know, he imploded all year long. But there was a stretch even then of, let's see, like 6 or 7 games where he was giving up 4 runs or less, you know, and right. Looked like he was going to be okay. But you know how that season ended, you know. And if you remember, when he started this season, starting April, May, before they finally put him in the bullpen in June, he was on pace, in terms of giving up home runs, he was on pace to surpass last year's abomination. He was going to beat it by a long shot. The only reason that he didn't is because they stuck him in the bullpen. So now he's right back at it, and he's probably going to match that total.
That's a hot mess.
But they're not going to put him in the bullpen, I don't think.
Well, they did this year. What's going to stop them from doing it next year?
They did temporarily until they felt like, okay, we can kind of work him back in.
Yeah, because he was poo.
But they haven't like shown any urgency to put him back in the bullpen now that we have mostly healthy starting pitching again.
Well, so you're going to take him out and put who, Pelfrey or Zimmerman? I mean,
we're not talking about what I want them to do. What I think they're going to do is I think they're going to put Pelfrey in the bullpen and let Sánchez be their fifth starter and just, you know.
This is next year. Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, you're right.
It's unfortunate, but I think that's the case, and that means one of Boyd and Norris is going to end up getting Right. You know,
I guess what I'm saying is long term, over the course of next year, I'm not saying what they will do, but I would envision a scenario where Pelfrey's got more of a chance to last than Sanchez.
I would love to see Pelfrey get a second chance next year. I really would. Despite the you know, tire fire that happened this year, if he can get anywhere near back to being just career normal innings eater guy,
he's a fifth starter.
Yep.
Yeah. If he's his career average, he's a fifth starter. For all that all that I made fun of him and the Pelf train and all this stuff and how crap he was. Like you said, if he's career average, he's a fifth starter.
Who would benefit from the better defense, which is what I said when the season started. I did not, know that he was going to walk more batters, strike out fewer batters, give it more home runs, all that crap. That
the walk thing for him was crap.
It was just bad. And he got lit up on the home run side of things.
Yep. Well, it was a double whammy.
You can't deal with that. All I know is I blew so much money on live games where he pitched, and it sucked every single time. Yep. It's going to take a while for me to get over that. So
yeah, Jordan likes him out of the bullpen eventually, maybe. So
just have a better season, please. That's all I ask, one way or the other.
Because I mean, I like the kids. The kids have a lot of promise, but they're still kids yet.
Yeah, they're not ready just yet. Not well, quite.
Well, and you saw, Boyd, he's going to show some flashes, but yeah, you're going to have games where he doesn't get an out.
That's right. He literally did not record an out.
He did not get an out.
And he gave up the cycle, a single, double, triple, and a home run.
Yep.
Oh, golly.
Now, he's done good work for us. I don't want to pile on him.
No, he's done.
You're going to get some stinkers.
And he did. He did. Then he did it against the Twins like a week before that. Absolutely got smoked. Oh, well, what do you do?
Looking forward to next year? We're going to win the World Series this year.
Yeah, and on that note, we're going to go ahead and shut down this segment. There will be none of that optimism crap here. This is...
sunshines and rainbows and unicorns.
Nope, the Voice of the Turtle is all about just hard reality. Just hard facts, man. All right. Yeah. Quick break. We'll come back and finish the show off with a seventh inning Kvetch, and we're going to get into the power rankings. But it's not going to be minivans because we just did that.
Amazing.
Right back to you after the break.
3 now. Here's the 2-2. Oh, boy. Curveball grabbed the outside corner. Victor not happy. Pitch that he felt went around the plate. You rarely see Victor complain. Brad Ausmus better get out there quickly. Oh, Victor got tossed. Wow.
And we are into the home stretch. It's time for the seventh inning Kvetch. And since, Eric, you're here graciously doing a guest spot for us, I decided that I thought it would be a good idea to have you just do your usual weekly thing with the power rankings. That's kind of your thing. And I always learn a lot from these segments. There is
sometimes the things you learn are true.
That's fair. Look, my Pop-Tart buying habits have changed dramatically as a result.
You're not buying Wildberry, are you?
Absolutely not, because you said that was straight trash, so I took that to heart.
Wildberry is as much of a real berry as Quentin Berry is. This is not a real fruit.
And you'll get the clap if you eat it.
Yeah.
That's a clap joke. You did a ranking of, was it state flags, I think?
Yeah, state flags.
I had so much fun like Googling each one of those as you were going through them. Like some of those I hadn't even obviously like retained in memory. So yeah, I always learn from this stuff.
Well,
so what were our options this week?
We have no options. You get one option.
Okay.
And the option is nuts.
Nuts?
Nuts.
All right, bring it.
Nuts. So this is Power Rankings. I'm going to review the top 7 and the bottom 3 nuts.
All right.
Starting at number 7, we have peanuts. Peanuts are the workmen of the nut family. You get some mixed nuts. What's going to be in that can? Peanuts, right? So what are you making your butter out of? Peanuts. Peanuts are cheap. They have a nice consistency. They're salted. You can do a lot of things. You honey roast them. They're a versatile nut, but they're nothing flashy. This isn't a fancy nut. They're peanuts. That's fair. Number 7.
Fair.
Yeah. Number 6 is hazelnuts. Hazelnuts, you don't see often, just by themselves. The joy of hazelnuts is really in Nutella. You know, you're going to have your pancakes or your waffles or your crepe, and you're going to hit that with some Nutella. Speaking of, I don't know the exact number, but something like 60% of all hazelnuts grown go into Nutella.
Wow. That's because nobody else knows what they are outside of.
Yeah. Hazelnuts, I mean, they're for flavoring coffee, I guess. Yep. I don't know. You're not really crushing some raw hazelnuts. Okay, number, what are we up to? I should have written these numbers.
That was six. Six.
Five. Number five is maybe a little surprise here, and that's a coconut.
Ooh.
Coconuts are good. You want to flake that. I like them in, you know, some bars, you know, like the sweet bar. Coconut, you know, kind of shavings. You can do a lot of nice things with. It's an interesting flavor. It provides scent to sunscreen. So coconut's pretty good.
And if you are part of Coconut Is Not a Real Nut Twitter, then just go to hell. I don't even want to hear from you.
Yeah, don't at me. Number four, getting back to a little bit more savory side of things, is pine nuts. Pine nuts are great. You'll find these like sprinkled on the top of like a thing of hummus. Mm-hmm. But the real joy of pine nuts is pesto. Do you like pesto?
Yes, I love pesto.
I love pesto too. So pesto is essentially chopped up basil and pine nuts, mm-hmm. and some oil. And so you just chop that up. You can have that on crackers, or you throw it in some pasta. Oh, you're good. You're living good with some pine nut pesto. It's number four. It's tasty. Number three, moving up, is almonds. Mm. Almonds are terrific, you know, slivered in some cereal, or just eat them plain. Just get a handful of almonds and eat them. Almonds are not an environmentally friendly food, though. They like soak up so much water because they grow them in California, right. And they require huge amounts of water.
Okay.
But I don't care. I don't give a crap. Like, I got water here. Just look in Detroit. They got more water than they know what to do with. Ship it to California. Grow me some freaking almonds. I don't care. Get your own drought problems. They're not here. Go away with your drought. Bring me some almonds. That's number three. Number two is pistachios.
Oh, yes.
Pistachios are easy to crack. And they're satisfying. They're much more satisfying than like eating a sunflower seed where you gotta like open it with some tweezers or something. Pistachios, you just kind of crack it open and eat it. They have like salt and pepper pistachios,
yes,
which are
do.
Really good. You know, you just get a big bag of those things. They're perfect with beer, which is, you know, an important calling card for any nut is like, does it go good with beer? So mm-hmm. pistachios, they have a lovely green color. As a kid, my mom would whip me up some pistachio pudding. You know, it was kind of this like teal green color.
Yeah.
I don't know why she fed us pistachio pudding. Like there's plenty of other good flavors of pudding, but I don't know. Pistachios are number two.
Did you ever eat the ones that like were red and like painted and they would stain your fingers? That was a thing for a long time. Pistachios were red coated.
No, I guess I didn't. Oh, they got the little dots on them?
No, they
like
were just the shells were straight red. They were coated in some weird. It was sticky too.
No, I'm unfamiliar. I'm not like you're not talking about when you go to the ballpark and you get like the German roasted.
Nope, I'm talking they were straight out of the little package at the gas station.
I'm unfamiliar. All right, so I always give you the opportunity. We've worked our way up to number one. What is the number one nut?
I have a couple. I'm going to go with my gut here, though, and say it is the cashew.
Cashews, you got it.
Boom.
Cashews are certainly they're the Cadillac of nuts. If Cadillacs were Maseratis, I mean, like, not like crap Cadillac, you know, some STS, like a really good car. Imagine that was a Cadillac, and then now it's the Cadillac of nuts. Right. This is the good stuff. These are, if you get in a jar of mixed nuts, they like brag about how many cashews there are in
yes.
it on the label. They're, okay, disclaimer here. Cashews aren't truly a nut. They are a seed.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But don't sass me with that. Okay. For our purposes, if it's in a jar of mixed nuts, it's a freaking nut.
Absolutely.
So stop it. Don't come at me with that. Cashews are delicious. They have a beautiful kind of curly shape, and they taste good.
They taste
good. That's why they're number one. They are amazing.
Have you had cashew butter?
Oh, that sounds delicious.
Oh, my friend.
That sounds like a luxury product.
It is.
Do I need to order it from some like in-flight magazine or
no? Stay out of the Sky Mall to get that. If you just go to your local Meijer, it's on the top shelf. So it's a top shelf product, and it is a little bit. You know, you're going to pay a couple extra dollars. I like to keep a jar of cashew butter for special occasions. Just right. when I'm feeling
Christmas,
like
Christmas around the holidays.
Yep. Like I want that on my toast because I ran out of caviar Pop Tarts, you know, but I want to still feel like I'm living big. Yeah. Try some. It's amazing.
I'd smear some cashew butter on stuff. Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Okay. We did it. That's top seven. Bottom three. Are you ready?
Hit me.
Third from the worst is Brazil nuts.
Boo.
They're kind of too big. Like, I want kind of a bite size. Like, I got to work at a Brazil nut. I mean, what am I going to do? Chew it in half? Like, I'm going to bite off half of it and save the rest for a little bit later? Like, but eating a whole Brazil nut feels like a little bit of an undertaking.
Uh-huh.
And they're not, they're not amazing. They're Brazil nuts. It's
the nut you have to crack twice.
Yeah, the nut you got to eat twice. Nobody wants that. All right, number two is macadamias. Macadamias are like the white bread of nuts, and they're always showing up in cookies with white chocolate chips in them. And like, you think you see the white in there and you're like, I'm going to get some white chocolate, and no, it's a freaking macadamia. Stop with that. Speaking of that. All right, here we go. Number one, what is the worst nut?
It has got to be the walnut.
Walnuts, you're two for two.
Yeah.
You're way better at this than Jordan.
Yeah. Well, I know Don't my nuts, man. I eat a ton of freaking nuts, so.
That's good. Walnuts are straight trash.
Yeah.
Okay, you eat these things, they're all wrinkly, and they, like, leave some sawdust in your mouth. They're just, like, all dry and nasty. And walnuts show up in things that are undesirable. You know?
Yes, they do.
Like some crazy salad or, you know, some cookie where you don't want nuts in it. You want cookie, but no, there's grandma stuck some walnuts in it for some reason. Because octogenarians can't not have nuts in every freaking dessert. Like, just leave it out of there. Walnuts are terrible. Stop being walnuts.
Get off my brownies too. Cause no.
Yeah. Who wants that?
No.
That's Power Rangers.
That's fantastic. And yes, I eat a crap ton of nuts. Like, it's a daily routine. I like to have a little mid-morning snack between breakfast and, you know, lunch. So I'd like to, you know, sit at my desk.
Yeah.
And I always keep a little pack of like Meijer mixed nuts there. I'll just have a little handful. And yeah, like, you nailed it, man. I screw the walnuts. I flick those across the cube farm. You know, it's definitely check into the cashew butter though. Get some of that. You some of that. It'll change your life.
Yeah, it's good nuts. Right. Nut butter.
Whoo, it's getting nutty here. All right. And that should just about do it for another episode of The Voice of the Turtle. Eric, do you have any final comments?
Stay hopeful, people. We have a chance.
I'll leave it at that then. So remember, we're only one half of the conversation, and you are the other half. So leave your comments for us, westofwoodward.com, or find us on Twitter. I'm at hookslide23. You've got Comerica Eric. And, of course, subscribe, rate, review the show on iTunes. Also, don't forget to check out the Podcastianos. They are on Twitter, at Podcastianos. Also online at podcastianos.com. That is a record number of times saying Podcastianos in my life.
You did very well.
Right there. That's... Yeah. Nice. Check them out. And thanks so much for stopping by, Eric. It's been real.
No, thank you very much for having me. It's been fun. Thanks.
So on behalf of Eric, Rob Rajacki, and waterlogged Tigers fans everywhere, this is Hookslide saying have a great week. Don't forget to ask for a doggy bag if you can't finish the meal. And we will see you the next time on The Voice of the Turtle.
Goodbye.